Hello, this is your Polycast for Monday, March 27th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, budget bills are taking shape at the Capitol, a teacher shortage looms in Minnesota, and an effort to back off ranked choice voting in St. Paul. Minnesota House and Senate committees will continue their push this week to complete major budget bills to meet earlier-than-usual deadlines. As those bills take shape, the differences between DFL Governor Mark Dayton and legislative Republicans are growing sharper. Facing the prospect of potential vetoes, Republican leaders have allowed plenty of time to rework some of the bills if necessary. Tim Pugmire has more.
With 8 weeks remaining in the 2017 session, Republican Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka says he's pleased with the progress so far. He says the early deadlines have required a quick pace and some heavy lifting. Gazelka says the plan to send budget bills to DFL Governor Mark Dayton more than a month ahead of the May 22nd adjournment date is good for negotiations. But it does not necessarily mean Republicans are expecting vetoes.
My hope is that we don't have to get to that. We want to have open-door conversations with them. We're going to invite them in. If you look at the beginning of session, the governor has participated as well. If that trend continues, there's no reason we can't get done in a timely fashion.
There's a lot to talk about. Republicans want to spend far less than Dayton and provide much more in tax cuts. There are big differences in nearly every budget area. Dayton has been particularly critical of Republican proposals for education, health care, natural resources, taxes, and transportation. But he said last week that he needs to see more details before considering potential vetoes.
We'll work with them in conference committees. We'll work with them, and see if we can find some common accord. But I'm not going to say I'm going to veto or not veto anything until I know the final specifics.
Dayton later took aim at House Republicans for eliminating funding for one of his budget priorities, voluntary pre-kindergarten. He accused them of using the interests of four-year-olds as a political bargaining chip in budget negotiations. And his top fiscal advisor, Minnesota Management and Budget Commissioner Myron Franz, criticized Senate Republicans for proposing big cuts in the operating budgets of state agencies.
If not amended to provide sufficient funding for the services that Minnesotans need and deserve in a fiscally responsible way, I will recommend to Governor Dayton that he veto Senate File 605.
DFL House Minority Leader Melissa Hortman said the GOP budget bills show the wrong priorities for Minnesota. Hortman said there are big differences to resolve in the remaining weeks.
I think it's possible that Republicans are planning two rounds of budget bills, a set that is ideological and destined to be vetoed. And I just hope that if that's their plan, that they have left enough time at the end of session to pass a budget for Minnesotans, to make sure there is no shutdown and there is no special session.
Republican House Speaker Kurt Dowd said there will be enough time to react to vetoes, but he's hoping to avoid them by working out budget bill differences in conference committees. Dowd is also counting on the governor to be fully engaged in those negotiations.
We know that we need a governor's signature to put a state budget in place, and I hope the governor knows that he can't sign a bill that we don't send to him. So he needs to sell us on the provisions that he feels that are important, and this is his opportunity to do it.
The House and Senate will begin voting on some of their budget bills this week. Votes on all of the bills are expected before the legislature takes its annual Easter Passover break in 2 weeks. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Minnesota schools are having trouble finding enough teachers. The problem has been growing for years, but the overall numbers hide a lot of nuance. Solveig Wastvedt has this look at the challenges some candidates face on the way to becoming a teacher.
For one Minnesota superintendent, the teacher shortage shows up as soon as a job is posted.
I wish I could say that we're having a boatload of people knocking down our doors to come teach for us.
Todd Holthouse from the Hills Beaver Creek School District in southwestern Minnesota says he used to get around 30 applications for an elementary school teaching job, and now it's down to a handful.
When we look at special education and some of our career tech ed courses, we will have maybe an applicant or not even that.
Hold House isn't alone. A recent Education Department report showed requests to the state for permission to hire teachers who aren't fully licensed have shot up since 2011. Meanwhile, statewide, the number of new teachers completing training programs dropped 15% from 2012 to 2014. And it's not just Minnesota. Shortages are happening across the country, especially in subjects like special education, math, and science. Many of the students and advocates we talked to said financial and time commitments are a big barrier for would-be teachers. Like Salah Ali, a master's student at Augsburg College going for his teaching license in math. Ali says he wants to give his students what he didn't have in school.
A lot of my teachers were not people of my race or my color, and I didn't see myself in them, you know. So I think me just being in the classroom motivated a lot of kids to see, you know, that they could achieve something in life.
Ali is in an Augsburg scholarship program that recruits students of East African origin. It pays tuition and the cost of state licensure tests. The tests alone run about $50 each, and candidates take several. Still, Ali has a major hurdle left, the one that comes up often in talk about the teacher pipeline: student teaching. State rules say teacher training programs must include at least 12 weeks of student teaching. Ali says he's worried about taking time away from the full-time job he's already working.
I have 3 children and my wife, and I have a mortgage and I have a car payment, and I have all these responsibilities that need to be, you know. So it's a big, like, should I continue?
Student teaching is a common requirement for teachers across the U.S., and a new Minnesota licensure system being considered at the Capitol does not remove the requirement for programs to include it. But the proposed system would let teachers get some types of licenses with fewer qualifications. There's also a proposal for state grants to help candidates afford student teaching. University of Minnesota professor Misty Sato says the licensing proposals could help in the short term. But she says for a long-term fix for shortages, don't look at lowering entry requirements. Take a lesson from other jobs like medicine and tech.
What those other fields will do is incentivize people to want to do that work. They'll offer strong beginning salaries. That's how the technical fields compete with people who are coming into teaching.
Sato says those fields also offer clear ways to advance in the job and good work culture. The legislature is trying to encourage new paths into teaching with grants for residency programs where students work in a school while taking classes. Todd Holthouse at Hills Beaver Creek says so far he's happy with the hires he's made. But he does wonder, with so few applications.
You have to start looking at what is before the students, and is it the quality that we are striving for, or is it something that we're settling for?
Holthouse says he's optimistic about the legislative efforts. He says the state just has to stay on task. Covering education, I'm Solveig Wastvedt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Opponents of ranked choice voting are going to make their case this afternoon to ask St. Paul again if residents really want instant runoff elections. People there approved the voting method in 2009, but opponents say it hasn't delivered on its promises to boost turnout and make campaigns more civil. Supporters say it's too soon to dismiss the potential benefits. Tim Nelson has the story.
You might call this a recount of the recount. 8 years after St. Paul decided to switch from traditional primary and general elections to ranked choice voting, opponents want a do-over. They say the original campaign for ranked voting was fatally flawed and that the system hasn't improved. They want city elections to go back the way they were.
It promises a lot of things and it doesn't deliver on any of them.
That's Chuck Repke, a longtime neighborhood and political activist in St. Paul. He has a long list of grievances.
The biggest one is that we are electing people in St. Paul and Minneapolis now without a majority of the people voting that day. In the case of the Ward 1 race in St. Paul in 2013, 25% of the people who went out and voted that day didn't vote for one of the top 2 vote-getters. There's something inherently wrong with that.
Repke is leading a charge to put the question of voting methods back on the ballot, possibly this November. It would mean an August primary and a runoff in November as soon as 2019. Repke says ranked voting needlessly delays results and complicates voting and hasn't helped third parties gain a foothold, one of the promises supporters initially offered. Repke also says a two-person November ballot lets voters see distinctions among the top contenders more clearly. Supporters of ranked voting say it's premature to switch back. Only three elections involving about 16,000 votes have been decided by ranked voting, and despite a mayoral race since the change, no citywide election has been decided by ranked voting. Incumbent Mayor Chris Coleman won an outright majority in 2013, and no second-choice ballots were counted. Gene Massey is with Fair Vote Minnesota, which backs ranked voting.
They want to put back in place a local primary, which would be held in early August in odd years, where 5, if you're lucky, 10% of the voters would be turning out. It is a very poorly attended, unrepresentative primary.
But doubters remain. They say the campaign to pass the measure in 2009 featured erroneous claims that ranked voting won endorsements from the city's DFL and then President Barack Obama, neither of which were true. The so-called Better Ballot campaign was fined $5,000 for what a three-judge panel called multiple and deliberate campaign violations leading up to that 2009 vote. Sean Toll, a St. Paul political consultant, is pushing the repeal campaign.
If it's the case that you had a tainted election in 2009, what's the problem with a redo?
Supporters contend the violations didn't have any real impact on the election and say it's political insiders that want to roll back the initiative. Ellen Brown was the chair of the 2009 campaign for ranked voting in St. Paul.
There's two people, maybe five or six, who are trying to repeal ranked voting. There were 7,000 people who signed a petition to get ranked voting on the ballot initially so that we could use it. And there were 17,000 people who voted to use it.
But the bottom line today is actual election outcomes haven't changed much with ranked voting. The DFL has exclusive control of city government, and negative campaigning, which ranked voting was supposed to thwart, is still a visible factor in local races. Joe Mansky is elections manager for St. Paul and Ramsey County. He says promises that ranked choice voting would appeal to more voters haven't panned out.
In the three elections that we have conducted, we haven't seen any real change in turnout, good or bad, as a consequence of having the ranked voting methodology.
The St. Paul Charter Commission's Charter Review Committee will weigh Repke's initiative this afternoon in City Hall. The committee could suggest a review by the entire City Charter Commission or just drop the matter. The commission has until July 11th to decide whether St. Paul should vote on voting again, although it will have to hold a public hearing on the proposal before it can get on the ballot. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Monday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.